Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. B-F-F-T. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Saw a story today online about kids. Apparently, kids are eating more fast food during the pandemic than they ate pre-pandemic. I told my wife that, and she said, yeah, because parents are just saying, screw it. Go through the drive-thru. More fast food than ever. Is the fast food getting better, though, Peter? Like, is it just us wanting to justify feeding our children crappy food that we go, oh, it's so much healthier
now? A little bit of A, a little bit of B. I think there are some better selections, but I think Anna's right. She hit the nail on the head. People just, when we're stuck at home together all day, you're just saying, you know what? I'm tired. I'm hungry. Screw it.
Yeah, she didn't say that. She didn't use the word screw it, but that's the best interpretation I can say on the air. Nigel Burton, Pac-12 network analyst, former player at Washington, head coach at Portland State, assistant coach at Oregon State, man of the world, is joining us now. A news story, Nigel. More kids are eating more fast food during the pandemic than they ate pre-pandemic. Why do you think that is?
Well, I assume this is my expertise, because if you've seen me lately, you can tell that I've been eating a lot of fast food. I'm assuming that's why I came on. John, that's a great question, man, because you'd assume with so many, everybody having to stay home, you know, I know we should have stock in Home Chef.
Yeah.
But we try to cook as much as we could at home, but it's kind of turned into, us being a fast food kind of family as well. So I get it. So,
let me ask you.
Yeah, because, I don't know, man. If it's between Ronald McDonald cooking for my family or me, I'm saying that my kids will choose Ronald every day of the week and twice on Sunday.
Happy meal. Nigel Burton with us. Hey, you got to call a live game last week. You were at Oregon State, Idaho. You were in the box. You were really focused. You were dressed nice on TV. How did you like even calling a game live?
You know, I had a blast, man. I normally do pregame and postgame, and that's fun because I get to sit in the room with Nick Aliotti and back in the day, and Ashley Adamson, and back in the day I was there with Ronnie Lott and Jake the Snake Plumber and Curtis Conway. But calling a game, man, is just different. You know, the energy is so much better, and I had a blast, man. So I hope I didn't screw up my future and be able to do it again. I hope I was pretty good at it, but I had a blast.
Oregon State against Idaho, I mean, a big difference in talent between the two programs on the field, but you know, as a defensive coach, getting a shutout against anybody is good. What did you see on Oregon State's defense?
You know, I'm seeing a team that tackles better. I'm seeing a team that fits better in terms of their run gaps, and just it seems like their understanding is better. I mean, I guess, you know, the reason that I was probably more critical of them in the past was just because it seemed like there were times when they didn't know what they were doing, and so now they look like, you know, they're wired in and know where they're supposed to be, and they're playing well together, and just to be honest with you, man, they look better. There's better athletes out there running around executing the defense.
They'll get USC this week. Are they ready for that challenge?
I think they're as ready as they're ever going to be because, you know, obviously they're missing two starters, and hopefully one or both of those guys are back on the defensive side of the ball. But when you look at the way they're clicking offensively, I mean, goodness. And I made this comment, and I believe it. They are pretty close to when we were humming with Coach Riley offensively. That's where they're at. You know, I remember beating USC, and you know, we had Anthony Weed Brown and Sammy Strotter, and you know, Mike Hassett just left, and you know, we had multiple guys who could contend as all conference skill players. And then for a while there, those guys disappeared in Corvallis. You didn't see those guys, and now They're 3 deep at running back. They're 6-7 deep at receiver. They're 2 deep at all conference level tight ends. They got 2-3 quarterbacks that they know, not that they guess can win in the Pac-12, that they know can win in the Pac-12. And their offensive line is playing better than they have. I can't even think of the last time that, you know, part of the last time was when Coach Riley was there and they were winning 9-10 games a year is when we saw an offensive line that was playing as well as they're playing right now. So, yeah, if there was ever a time they were ready to go win in the Coliseum, this is it.
Nigel Burton, Pac-12 Network with us. Washington has struggled under Jimmy Lake. Are you surprised?
Very, very. You know, I guess I can't say that I'm super surprised that they were struggling offensively because, you know, they're still relatively young and they had a bunch of receivers who transferred out. Really, this is the first year under, under John Donovan as offensive coordinator. So I'm not totally shocked that they had to get their legs underneath them. I think what shocked me was Michigan run for over 300 yards against that Washington defense. That was shocking. And so it looks like they took it personal, and they've been seeing the press clippings, so I think they're pissed off, and they took it out on Arkansas State. But now Pac-12 play begins, and it ain't Arkansas State anymore.
You know, I keep looking at the South, and I think I got it figured out, and then Fresno State beats UCLA. I thought Fresno State would play with UCLA, but I felt like the Bruins would get them. You've got a South division where Arizona State looks really sloppy. Utah does not look like Utah physically at the line of scrimmage. UCLA looked great and then lost. USC's got a coach firing. You know, what do you make of the South right now?
It's just like you laid out, man. It's kind of a mess. But, again, now that you've got familiar opponents and you've got obviously what Chip has got going at UCLA, and man, to be fair, Arizona State and UCLA, I mean, it was like they found ways. I mean, and I'm not talking like the players didn't, I mean, just weird stuff. Merlin Robinson is an all conference, potential All American linebacker, gets a pick, he's running down the sideline, and he fumbles. And so they end up losing that possession. BYU gets the ball back. You look at UCLA. Dorian Thompson-Robinson, he's an all-conference quarterback. He drops back the pass and literally just drops the ball. Like, when does that happen? They have a chance to scoop and score a 70-yard fumble return, and they were up. So that's going to put Fresno State to bed. Like, game's over. And the kid goes to scoop and score, and he just, like, trips and falls on his face and doesn't recover the ball. It was just like, I don't know what's happening, but I feel like God's on their side. I don't think that's necessarily an indication of those teams, man. I mean, Fresno State's for real. We know that because we saw them in Eugene almost beat a team that the next week went and gave it to Ohio State. So, it's unfortunate the way the ball bounced. But I think there's still some really solid teams in the South. You laid them out, and we saw what USC did in the second half against Wazoo.
Do you think, as you look at Utah, that Kyle Whittingham can figure it out, or is it a personnel problem? BYU shoved him around. San Diego State shoved him around. Do they have a personnel problem? And, you know, obviously Charlie Brewer leaving the program, you know, becomes a story. What's going on there?
Yeah, I wish I could tell you, man. That part is stunning to me because, you know, Utah's always had this mantra. And I will say this is what happens when you start getting into the transfer portal, right? You show up on campus as a freshman, you learn something real early at Utah. You either get with the program or you get out of the way. And, you know, he has a saying that was a lot more, a lot cleaner than the way I just put it. But that's basically how it goes. Like, you know, we have a way of doing things and it works and you got to buy in or you can't be here. And for the most part, 99% of those kids buy in. Start going to the transfer portal, especially with quarterbacks. Those guys are roster watchers, man. Those guys are all about, like, look, man, I'm trying to do what I need to do so that I can start, so that I can go to the league. And I know that, you know, it's kind of the cool thing to, you know, hey, I'm a player guy, and, you know, it's great that kids can transfer. And I do. I believe that, too, that it's great that kids can transfer. But I know my kids, if my kid ever called me, and he was out of school and said, Dad, I want to quit, and I'm gonna leave, and I'm going to try to find something else. My answer to him is no. You finish what you start. You finish the season. You started the season, you finish the season. that you want to leave afterwards, and maybe there's not a plan for you, and maybe it doesn't work out. You know, I'm totally with that. But you finish what you start, man. And I found that to just be against everything that football is supposed to be about. And I'm just keeping it real. You know, I know maybe it's not the cool thing to say anymore. Maybe there's this new school of thought that, you know, it's all about me and, you know, hey, man, I'm trying to get paid. But the reality of the situation is, man, if that's what your line of thinking is, that's okay. That's what golf is for. That's what tennis is for. Not doubles, singles, right? You know, it's not a team deal. Track and field is a team sport, but it's really individual. So go do those sports. Football doesn't work that way. Football is a sport that's about the team first, and it's about guys sacrificing themselves so that somebody else can be the hero. D lineman takes on a double team, gets smacked in the face, gets his nose busted, but the linebacker can be clean to make a play, and he gets all the press clippings. But that's your role, man. And offensive linemen never get to touch the ball. That's the game. And so if that's not you, man, go pick up something else, man.
You played on phenomenal defenses at Washington. You've coached great defensive players. When a unit like that is all on the same page, as you mentioned, and clicking in that way, what does that feel like as a player to be on the field?
Oh, dude, it's the coolest. It is the coolest thing because what starts to happen is you're able to talk to each other without even saying words. Like, that's when you know you got it. You know, it goes from, like, I don't even know what the hell I'm doing. And I really don't know what he's doing. Like, okay, I kind of got an understanding. I get it, you know. And then it goes from that to, like, all right, we got this. And now we're kind of, you know, it's like I'm trying to teach my guys a Jesuit right now. It's like they live by rules their whole lives, right? And so now I'm trying to teach them concepts. And, like, they're struggling with it because they're like, no, dude, I live by rules. Like, my mom says go to bed at 10. I go to bed at 10. It's like, yeah, but, like, if it's a Saturday, it's a concept. You know, like, you have a conversation, and but what do I really have to do? Like, what? You're asking me to go to bed early because I have a responsibility, but if I don't have that responsibility, can I stay up later? And that's how football works, right? It's like, yeah, this is your rule, but based on who that guy is and who you are and the situation we're in, that rule might bend. It might change a little bit. And so when you get to kind of that almost next level is when you're able to bend rules and you communicate with each other about what you're anticipating from the. You're no longer learning defense. You're anticipating what the offense is doing. You know, Mark Banker used to always talk about, we ain't teaching defense every week, man. We're teaching offense every week. You know, we do what we do, and we want them to be able to anticipate everything. Mm. And the final level that you see in the NFL and really high-level college defenses, they don't even speak it anymore. It's literally just like they look at each other and they go, hey, you got, yeah? Okay, cool. And somebody who's observing is like, what the hell is happening? Like, you're not part of this. So just enjoy the show, you know. And that's you know, Oregon State's not there yet. They're starting to get into that knowing when to bend rules kind of thing, and that's when you're on the verge of something getting pretty special.
Oregon starts the year, you know, in week two with a big win at Ohio State. Their quarterback Anthony Brown Jr., you know, making plays. As you look at the rest of the season, what happens in scouting as we get into week three, week four, week five, when the opposing team's got film on you? How does that change?
I'm not sure it does. I mean, they know who that guy is. There's film, and he only, and typically college teams only do four-game breakdowns anyway of a team, so I don't think that's going to be a huge deal. You know, again, just met with my guys over at the high school, and I'm like, look, man, football is chess, not checkers, right? It's not about just making moves. What it's about is making a move to set up your next move and anticipating the move of your opponent. So what Joe Moorhead's really good at is, okay, yeah, this is what we've shown you so far, but we also know that he has this skill set in the back pocket, and I still got some things that I can do based off of what we've done in the first three games. Now in game four, I'm going to give you this, which – it looks the same. It's the same formation. It might even, the receivers and the everything might look the same initially, and then bam, instead of running a corner route, he's running a post route. And instead of it, you know, instead of it being outside zone, it's actually reverse off of it. And now that's just more stuff you got to prepare for that all look the same. And it was easy to teach because, okay, guys, hey, remember we've been doing this for a couple weeks. Now we're just adding this one little tweak. And you have a system that continues to be able to do that so you can always stay one step ahead of your opponent. And you're playing chess while they're playing checkers.
Nigel Burton, Pac-12 Network. Chip Kelly and UCLA had this wild game with Fresno State, really kind of interrupted their momentum. What do you like that UCLA is doing? What can they continue to do in Pac-12 play to sort of assert themselves?
You know, I like the fact that, one, DTR is playing really well at the quarterback level. They're able to run the football. And they haven't been using him to run the football that much. That's the part that's pretty cool. Like, they have. I mean, don't get me wrong. You're gonna, you know, there's always going to be that one guy who, like, you know, well, Nigel said that they don't run the quarterback. And look at these three plays I just found. Like, okay, I got you. But it's not the basis of what they're doing like it was the last 2 years, because DTR wasn't comfortable with the passing game. But now he's able to sit back in the pocket and distribute. And when he's scrambling around, he's not scrambling to run. He's still scrambling to throw. So those are things that I like. I like the fact that there's not one guy offensively. They got multiple guys now that they're spreading the ball to in the passing game, especially now that, you know, Felton's gone, and that hurts into the NFL. But, you know, they got, you know, they're feeding these athletic big tight ends they have. And then, you know, you got Chase, who's, you know, from here in Oregon. And, you know, they've got Phillips, their outside wide receiver. So they got these guys now that you can't just focus on. So last year, like, you were able to focus. If you stopped Felton, they were hosed. Like, they didn't have a whole lot of other weapons they felt great about. And now they've got some guys. And then I think defensively, man, they're just playing solid, and they're getting after people. They're physical, and they fly to the football. So those are all the things I like. I think they'll get right back on track. I think this Fresno State thing is going to be a blip that hopefully when they look back on it, they're going to go, that's what cost us a chance at something big.
I think people underestimate, too, what that game meant to the Fresno State kids who – desperately wanted to be Pac-12 players, and maybe academically they're not there, or maybe they went like the quarterback and went to Washington and then transferred out. Like, it's a chip on the shoulder game.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I think after a while, when you're at Fresno State, I don't know how much that means. Because Fresno State's always been that team who, like, you know, there's guys on that team who turned down Pac-12 offers. Like, there's guys who, they know they're dudes. They chose to be there. You know, that running back, his dad is a legend at Fresno State. That's where he always wanted to go. I'm sure Pac-12 schools want him to come. And he was like, no, man, I'm a Bulldog. The end. So, you know, I mean, I'd say that's for the Idahos, the Utah States of the world. But if you're a Fresno, you walk into the Coliseum and the Rose Bowl thinking you're going to win because you're a Fresno State. Like, you got a bunch of those wins in your history. You know, you're at Nevada. You're at, you know, that ain't Ball State. You know what I mean? It's just not the same. You know, the Boise States, the Fresno States, you know, the Nevadas in the past, those places go into Pac-12, you know, stadiums thinking we're going to win and it's going to be fun to dance on the field. And, again, it ain't Ball State. So it's just not the same kind of animal.
Nigel Burton, Pac-12 Network, is with us. USC's playing with Dante Williams, interim coach. How does that affect a team?
It depends how they respond to Dante. And knowing how, you know, who he is, they're going to respond great. I think they're excited. He's a high-energy guy. You're going to start throwing guys in different roles. And so the question is, are they ready for those roles? The part that's really hard is the assistant coaches, right? Because those guys are all going to, you know, they're coaching their butts off and they're working, but they're also like, I got to find my next gig because more than likely somebody new is going to come in here and I may not have a job. And so it's keeping guys focused on the task at hand. And, I mean, how do you tell somebody, like, hey, don't get on the phone and call your buddies about a next job when they got to feed their families? You know what I mean? Like, how do you walk that line, you know? Coaching for the team that you're there and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that sounds well and good until you got to go home to your wife and say, we got to ask for public assistance. Hey, that goes out the window. So, he's got a heck of a challenge ahead of him, you know, unless things start really going well and they're playing well and doing well. And then someone goes, you know, Dante, we'll consider you for the head coaching job. But, you know, even then, you know, as an assistant, man, that's a life. You know, luckily I never had to live that life because I knew guys who went through that, man, and that's got to be hell.
I look at, you know, Oregon's path, and the conference is so tough week in and week out. It's hard to go undefeated. Why do you think that is in the Pac-12? What, the play is up and down? Are we just talking about 19 to 21 year old kids? Or is there something else going on in the Pac-12 conference where you're just going to get, you know, a lot of parity and a lot of weird outcomes?
Well, one, I think a couple of reasons. One, out here, you got a lot of great programs with a lot of great history and a lot of great things that will drive you to those places. So you know, it's not the Big Ten where it's like, dude, nobody in their right mind's turning down Ohio State or Michigan to go to Indiana. Like, I'm sorry, it's not happening. You know, out here, people will turn down USC and Oregon to go to Washington, or turn down Washington and Oregon to go to UCLA, or turn down all four of them to go to Stanford because it's Stanford. So it's hard to stack chips the way that, you know, happens in a lot of the other conferences where, you know, outside of Northwestern and Vanderbilt, like who on the East Coast is selling, you know, hardcore academics and being able to play Power Five football? On the West Coast, you got the top two public schools in the world every single year in UCLA and Cal. You got one of the top private schools. You got one of the top 10 public academic schools in Washington. You got, depending upon if you want to go into journalism, you got Oregon or Arizona State. I mean, you just got, it's just different. And so it's hard to stack five-star players. So what Mario is pulling off is insane. Let's just start with that. And then you just got great coaches. I mean, like, you're dealing with, I mean, you go down a list, you know, Mario Cristobal, the, you know, Chip Kelly, the, I mean, people were saying that Chip might get fired. I remember when he had college and pro football on its knees begging him to come, you know, wherever he was, you know, wherever they were. And so, I mean, you know, you got Herm Edwards, you got guys who used to be roam NFL sidelines who are now, you know, Pac-12 head football coaches. So, I mean, every single week is, you know, and I made this joke the other day. I go, man, the one thing that's kind of cool about high school is, like, every now and again, like, there's a team where you can just kind of relax. And I was used to, like, okay, cool, who we got? I was like, all right, oh, God, we got Washington State. Like, you know how many receivers they got? Okay, we beat them. Okay, cool. All right, we got Arizona State. Like, hey, we got Arizona State. Like, you know how many athletes? Okay, we beat them. Okay, cool. What do you mean we got USC next? Like, that's just, that's your life in this conference. And, I mean, it's cool, but it probably didn't add years to my life.
Yeah, you're around high school kids. Do the high school kids in our state want to go to the Pac-12 schools? Do they want to go to Oregon State, or are their aspirations and dreams like Alabama, LSU? You know, what's making it in the eyes of a good high school player in our state?
Man, I wish I was coaching some high school kids who could go to Alabama. And I'm coaching a bunch of guys who are like, you know, God, if I could just get the pen. matter of fact, this week we take on, it's like, I'm like, oh yeah, who do you got? It's like, oh, I got this. Like, we're playing this team that, let's see, they got a receiver who has an Alabama offer. Their quarterback has a Florida State offer. I think their running back's offered a Navy or something. I'm like, good God, can we get one of those guys? Like, I just need one, you know? I don't know, man. I think Oregon obviously is hot, and, you know, they have the attention of everybody across the country. And I think, you know, for 98% of the kids, 99% of the kids in this state would love the opportunity to play at either one of those. And there's the occasional national recruit who has options. And then it's just, like, what's important to them? Like, what do they want? You know, are you making a decision for the next 40 years of your life? Are you just trying to get to the league? Are you going where you're comfortable? Like, you know, and from there, I don't care. You know, I just hate seeing guys leave the West Coast, because to me, no matter what kid you are, you want the city life, you want the college town, you want high academics, you want a place that will just get you to the league. Like, we answer all of those in a Pac-12. You don't have to go to US, or you don't have to go to Alabama for that. You don't have to go to Michigan for that. Like, you can get all that here on the West Coast. So, and then when the hard part is when you look across the country and you see the starting Clemson quarterback, you know, starting quarterback at Clemson is a West Coast kid. Starting at Alabama is a West Coast kid. You start going at Ohio State, West Coast kid. And you're just looking at it and you're like, dude, if these guys just stayed here, good grief. You know, so that's our challenge, man, is to keep all those kids on the West Coast and get them to see what the Pac-12 conference is and why they should stay.
Do you miss recruiting? Because you used to be on the road at Oregon State recruiting, at Portland State recruiting. Do you miss getting out, getting in living rooms? Or is that part of the equation as a coach that you kind of go, man, the coaching's great, the kids are great, but being on the road recruiting?
I loved it. I don't miss the hotels and the flights, but I do. And that's why I think I'm still coaching now, is just the relationships that you build. And I do. I thought it was cool then. I think it's cool now. It wasn't a job to me. I mean, that was fun, you know, is to get to know people and build relationships. And what was crazy was, like I said, you know, some of the best relationships I built were kids who were like, hey, man, I love you. I can't come to your school, but, like, if we could stay in touch. And then, you know, Dominican Sue just hit me up, like, 2 weeks ago. I'm in Oregon. I get a text from him, you know. And I tell him every now and again, though, I'm so pissed off. And I'm like, dude, you know, if we're this tight and you didn't play for me, like, imagine if you'd actually played. Like, you know. but it is. Because when it's all said and done, man, you know, like, if my win-loss record is on my tombstone, that means my wife hates me. You know, it's like, it ain't about that. It's just about... It's about how many lives you affected and who's going to miss you. And that's it, you know. And so that's what the game gave me, man, was relationships with all these people that, and I just, that's what's more important to me than the other stuff.
Well put. Nigel Burton, Pac-12 Network. Appreciate you.
Yeah, anytime, John. You know that, man.
There he is. Good stuff. Love the end of that, especially.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.